Okay. Brain tilings and two brains and Chan Salman's theories, three different notions. And what we will do with these three notions is to connect between them. Brain tilings were used before to construct 3+1 dimensional theories, leading to conformal field theories in the infrared, giving rise to the largest class of theories with ADS duals. And two brains became recently popular because there was some advancement in connection to Chan Salman's theories. And we will see how we can talk about all of these three notions. So here's the list of collaborators: Alberto from Milano, Yang Hui from Oxford, David from MIT, and Sebastian, that's Lars, from Santa Barbara. In fact, there are a few more. I don't have their photos. So. Okay. Let's give some motivation. One field theoretic motivation is to introduce a large class of super conformal field theories in 2+1 dimensions. And if you ask yourself how many super conformal field theories do you know in 2+1 dimensions, and so tell me. So the purpose of this talk would be to enhance this class of theories. Second motivation is to ask what's the world volume theory of a stack of n M2 brains in M theory. There has been a lot of activity around this point. And the third motivation is to understand Chan Salman's theories better. Well, here we should add a comment that in the past, let's say late 80s, people studied Chan Salman's theories intensively because of the connection to topological invariants of three manifolds. So you would write down, you pick a manifold, write down a Chan Simons action, just the gauge field, just the Chan Simons term, and compute correlation functions with these gauge fields to construct invariants. They do not depend on a metric, and so those are invariants of the manifold. Now, and this led to a very nice set of works, but here we are taking a different approach. We're going to supersymmetrize those Chan Simons theories and to add scalars. Those scalars can admit vacuum expectation values and therefore lead to moduli spaces of vacua, and the most of the interest will be on the moduli spaces of vacua and not on the topological properties. And in fact, it turns out that the Chan Simons levels become Faelioplus parameters of the supersymmetric theory. And so they play a different role than what they do in the context of topological invariants. Another motivation which might come with ties with the math is to get a larger interaction between this topic of quiver gauge theories and some topics in algebraic geometry. So that's a possible motivation. When I gave this talk to a math audience, then that was a more relevant motivation. Okay, so there is a long-standing problem to ask what's the theory which is dual to ADS4 times H7, where H7 is Sasaki-Einstein, and it's dual to M2 probing Calabi-R4, that is the cone of this Sasaki-Einstein. So let's see how we construct that. So before we begin with the actual theories, let's just recall what is special in 2+1 dimensions. The Young-Wills coupling has dimension 1/2, it's dimension full, and therefore all infrared theories are strongly coupled. Okay, so they are not useful for description of gauge theories. You immediately get into some problems with the notion, with the fact that it is strongly coupled. On the other hand, if you take Chern-Simons terms, they are exactly marginal, dimension three operators. And therefore, the coefficients have dimension zero. So they are good candidates for parameters of a conformal field theory. And furthermore, they are also integers. So they are much more stable than the usual gauge coupling that we know in 3 plus 1 dimension. It is dimensionless, but it is a real variable, and therefore it can change continuously. Here they are integers, it's harder to vary those things. So as a result, we get a scale invariant theory. We have a candidate for a scale invariant theory that has no beta function. Okay, why is that? Because as we vary the scale, the couplings remain integer, and it takes a lot of effort to vary that. The beta function stays zero for quite a large range of scales. And in fact, based on previous computations, at best what we can find is finite renormalization, which happens typically at one loop. Okay. That's the best we know so far. So you could have a classical theory with a Chern-Simons coupling, do a one loop computation, it gets corrected by a finite jump, and then you're done. Okay? But for the amount of supersymmetry that we have, 4 supercharges, in addition to the restrictions that we put on the ranks, not even this happens. So the classical Chern-Simons remains the quantum Chern-Simons coupling. Okay, and this leads to an infinite family of superconformal field theories, which is parameterized by the Chern-Simons levels. Any questions on this point? The rank does not change, or what? How do we know what?
That's exactly. If the theory is so that if the
so because of super
supersymmetry is exactly conformal.
Right, so this particular supersymmetry gives rise to 2 types of fermions. One that gets a correction with a positive sign, one which gets correction with a negative sign. And the correction depends on the rank of the gauge group or the number of flavors. Okay? If we choose the ranks to be all equal, then you'll have an equal contribution with a plus sign, and the same amount of contribution with the minus sign, such that the total correction will be zero. So supersymmetry plus the requirement of equal ranks keeps the levels exact at the quantum level. And if we will vary the supersymmetry, n equals 3, we'll have to rethink about that and to check again. It will be harder because n equals 3, the fermions divide differently in the
example. Maybe the two fermions, the beta function, right?
For n equals 3 and for n equals 1, you have.
It's strange.
I wouldn't call it wrong. It's not really too wrong. I mean, the Chern-Simons level jumps, but not as a function of scale. It cannot do that because it's an integer number.
I'm talking about the two for you have.
Oh, you mean the gauge coupling? The proofed coupling. Sorry?
N over.
N over K. Supersymmetry. Well, perhaps in other supersymmetries, but with N equals to 2, supersymmetry, 4 supercharges. There's no dependence on n. Many quantities are protected. As long as you deal with holomorphic quantities, they are protected. Chern-Simons level is part of it. It because it can be written as a term in a holomorphic. Okay. finite. So.
But I thought I can always try to imagine two degree of fields scale by scale. So if I do that, that can mean that I'm not. So what I'm going to see if I do that.
I didn't understand the question. So you have a chance surface with an integer chance answer k. It can jump only by an integer number.
If I integrate out the fields scale by scale, what I'm going to see.
What happens to?
To the transformance level if I integrate out the fields scale by scale. Or
if you are dealing with massless fields, they will not be integrated out. You will be still left, and that's the situation which we have for n equal to super simple. You have a collection of massless fields,
okay.
And they will be there. I mean, you start with a classical action, it okay. Remains the same by super simple, it remains the same. Super protection does not get corrected. At most, you get wave function renormalizations. And all of the interaction terms that you start with in the classical theory remain. In the quantum theory, at best, what can happen is that the coefficients may change. If these are coefficients of superpotential, they don't even change. Some coefficients of kinetic terms may change, but because the chance science level is an integer, and because we choose the ranks to be equal, this doesn't even change.
Right. So suppose I do n equal to 0, and you said there is a finite one-loop normalization. And it's a finite one-loop in what sense? I just stay without all the fields, or can just,
So you'll have a one loop contribution to the action that is proportional, that it gives you a Chern Simon, effective Chern Simon level, Chern Simon's operator. Okay? So you'll generate a counter term. That looks like a Chern-Simons interaction with a coefficient that is an integer. For example, the rank. So for your amusement, try to compute the one loop tuple function for interaction of gauge fields, where you have one fermion running in the loop. You compute the contribution and find that the contribution gives you a Chern-Simons interaction. Any other questions? Okay. So where are we? Okay, so we are at this point. We are led to find an infinite family of super conformal field theories, which are parameterized by the Chern-Simons terms. If I vary those Chern-Simons terms, I'll still have a conformal field theory. So for any choice of an integer of those Chern-Simons levels, I will still have a conformal field theory. And now I can talk about a lattice of conformal field theories. So I have a lattice. The lattice is parameterized by the Chern-Simons level. And every point on the lattice represents a conformal field theory. Okay? And if I have one gauge group, then I will have a one-dimensional lattice. If I have more than one gauge group, then I will have a higher dimensional lattice. Every point on this lattice is a super conformal field theory. Okay? So if I have G gauge groups, it's a G dimensional lattice of conformal field theories. And if I put conditions, C conditions, then I'll have G minus C sub lattice of conformal field theories. Okay? That's the structure of conformal field theories that we should keep in mind. Any questions in this point? Okay, so now let's go back to 3D+1 dimensions where we have a fairly good understanding of construction of ADS-CFT duals. So suppose that we take N D3 brains and we put them transverse to a Calabi-Yau 3 singularity. And we ask what is the gauge theory that lives on the free brain in the presence of this Calabi-Yau 3. We know how to compute that, and the dual ADS background is going to be an ADS5 times H5, where H5 is a Sasaki-Einstein base of this labial tree. The best description of how to find those gauge theories is in terms of brain tilings, and I will now go over the principles of what brain tilings mean. Okay, so here's a tiling in the figure, three hexagons. This is a periodic bipartite tiling of the two-dimensional plane. In this tiling, we have three different hexagons. They are repeated periodically, and they represent three gauge groups, which are coupled by nine fields, as we see over here, and with an interaction term that are given by these nodes over here. So let's recall the dictionary. Oh, here I put an advertisement for. This is a math work by a student from Bath University. So if you are interested in the math aspects of brain tiling, then that's his PhD thesis. Okay. So how is the dictionary? For every tile, for every face, we put a UN gauge group. Okay. For every edge in the tiling, we take a bifundamental chiral multiplet, which is charged under the two gauge groups that it separates. Every edge is a boundary between two faces. Every face is associated to a gauge group. And so this edge will be charged under those two gauge groups. And every node is going to correspond to an interaction term in the superpotential. If it has a valence k, then it's going to be corresponding to order k polynomial term in the superpotential. Okay? So this is the three hexagon tiling. It has three tiles and therefore corresponds to a three gauge group model with nine fields. And six interaction terms, each interaction term is cubic. Okay, here's another example. This is a different tiling. It's a chessboard array tiling. And you could think of tile number one as black tile, white tile. So it's really like a chessboard array. It contains two different tiles, so there are two gate groups. There are four fields. Four bifundamentals, two which go from one to two, and two which go from two to one. Okay? And there are two different nodes, one white, one black, of valence four, so the superpotential has two quartic interactions. So it's a very simple rule of writing down the Lagrangian in 3+1 dimensions. So, by construction, white nodes correspond to plus sign in the superpotential and black nodes to negative sign. Arrows are oriented in an alternating fashion, as you can see over here. If I go around a tile, in, out, in, out, and so on. Okay.
Just follow up on this, but how do we know that, for example, conformal invariance will be broken if the ratio of coefficients is not one? Absolutely. I mean, you're saying it's plus or minus one roughly when you
given the this. So this is this tiling gives you a well-defined Lagrangian. What you can do is to do perturbative computations on this Lagrangian.
Now, for example, in the Carney fault in four dimensions, the anomalous dimensions are huge. So anything, you know.
Well, why
can you do for this?
Well, okay, I'm thinking in terms of strong coupling, right? So if I have a dual, AGS dual.
Mm-hmm. So if you put different coefficients in the superpotential.
Right.
So the, is this theory still infrared in the, yeah, I mean, in conform on the infrared or not?
It, you'll break, most likely you'll break conformal invariants on the infrared. You could do that by perturbative computations. It's very hard to do strong coupling computations, but in the infrared.
Maybe it floats. Yeah. Maybe you put any lambda coefficient there in front of the second term and it will float.
At best, I can only say that with plus minus signs, it will flow to conformal field theory. With other coefficients, it will be harder to show. Yes.
Any tiling that I can write following these rules with respect to conformal field?
Yeah. Pick your favorite tiling, the real week, by part by. An infinite flux. There's no
question. The conformal field will have phases, right?
That's right. They do not fall into this class of theories
or whatever.
Correspond to Calabi-Yau manifolds?
There will be sometimes you will break and it's not going to be any more three dimensional. So what it will mean is that so let's say the term on a phase will correspond to a flux. The flux back reacts on the background and they may turn it to be to lose dimensions, for example.
But I'm talking about a discrete term.
Yeah, so you're talking about, let's say, the n plus 4 theory and changing there are two interaction terms and the relative coefficients you want to turn to phases.
On that or just the canonical?
For this, we just don't know the corresponding ABS dual. And this method doesn't give you more information. Yes, we know the Quirrell gauge theory. We could, to some extent, compute properties of the modular space of Machiavelli. It's difficult. It's not easy. Not always. It's three-dimensional. Well, we don't really understand what is the role of this discrete torsion. Well, let's take the simplest. I guess you're thinking in terms of a background of C3 mod Zn cos Zn with discrete torsion tendril, let's say. Yeah, we could write down the quiver, we could compute the modular space of Lambda. But I still think, I mean, you don't really understand the ABS dual. The scaling dimensions will not change, most likely. Scaling dimensions are going to still be one third, two thirds per field. Because turning on the discrete torsion hardly changes the scaling dimension. But I don't have much more to say about those theories. So I'm restricting to a very specific class over here. A class in which all interaction terms appear with plus and minus signs, and they all lead to conformal field theories. And if in 3+1 dimensions you have at least one tile which is different than a hexagon, then the conformal field theory is going to be strongly coupled. So certainly over here, if the tiling will consist only of hexagons, then it's just an noble form of C3. Yeah.
So given this kind of tiling, so is it the theorem that you always get the moduli space Calabi-Yau manifold?
Yeah.
And if you have a Calabi-Yau manifold, say, given by equation in, I don't know, in Cn, is it straightforward to write the tiling corresponding to it?
Yes, there are methods. It's not so straightforward, but it's a procedure. There is an algorithm which takes you from the toric, has to be toric, toric radial, to the time.
So, sorry, I mean, I still don't understand. You were saying something about weak coupling. I don't see, once you write down the superpotential of this type, there is absolutely no weak coupling computation I can do, right? If I look at your tiling.
There is.
How? There are four fields. The superpotential must have dimension 3, which means that all of those axes have a huge anomalous dimension of order 1.
Indeed, for it. But when you do perturbative computations, you do it in the UV.
But in the UV, it's not renormalized.
Yeah, so then in the UV, what you can do is to, you do start with a coefficient that has
but
a scale.
You have the exact beta function.
Yeah, you do have the exact beta function.
But there is a, well, I mean, there is only four, you know, four supercharges. So there is a wave function. And, I mean, there is.
No, but there's an exact formula for the. The function includes the z factor of all fields. Then you have to check the marginal direction.
So you use standard methods of perturbation theory.
Beyond perturbation theory, it's exactly the
coupling. Yeah, yeah, well, for the beta function, that's true. But those are couplings.
To all of those in perturbation theory, non perturbative.
Couplings in this
OK. Any other questions? Okay, so the graph is bipartite. That's what we said before. The nodes alternate between the black and white, clockwise, counterclockwise. That's also something around white nodes. The arrows are going clockwise around black nodes, they go counterclockwise. And then because of the bipartite property, odd-sided phase are forbidden because we said that as we go around the phase, the arrows are alternating in and out. If there are odd number of edges, then it cannot satisfy this. So that means that we only have squares, hexagons, octagons, and so on, but there are no pentagons, triangles, and so on. And if we trace it back to a condition in the gauge theory, then that just means that there is no anomaly cancellation saying that the chiral anomalies vanish in such a situation. White nodes with plus sign, black nodes with minus sign, these things we said. And that's the bottom line. These rules define a unique Lagrangian in 3 plus 1 dimension. OK? Now, let's try to. So, this was a review on what happens in 3 plus 1 dimensions. What do we do in 2 plus 1 dimensions? It turns out that we need to modify it in a very, very simple way. So, given such a tiling, the only thing I'll do is to add Chern-Simons levels, one per tile. And then I'm done. Okay? And then my claim is that this gives rise to a conformal field theory in 2 plus 1 dimensions. With an ADS dual, now ADS dual, ADS 4 times Society Einstein 7. So the only modification that we do is remove the gauge coupling that we write down in 3 plus 1 dimensions and add instead a Chern-Simons term per gauge group with an arbitrary coefficient, arbitrary integer, which is the level. Okay? So here's the list of Lagrangians that we have. Now you can see why we have lattices, right? Because we have sets of integers that we add one per tile. And these are points on lattices, and every point on this lattice is claimed to be the conformal field theory. Okay? And now I'm claiming this is the largest known family of superconformal field theories in 2 plus 1 dimension. Okay, any questions on this point?
Are you going to mention later the corresponding? Seven manifolds that for each time concrete? Is it like sort of in four dimensions for tiling you can come up with a toric-cola VR? Right?
That's right. Yeah. So now my task
is a specific construction at the same level.
Yes, yes, yes. So my task now is to take a tiling with a given choice of Chern Simons level. That's what I need to provide, right? To pick a tiling, pick a choice of Chern Simons level, and ask what's the corresponding moduli space of this theory. Show it's always four complex dimensional moduli space. And is a toric Calabi-Yau form. Okay?
This for potential will not always be part of
the anything, depending on your time. Your time.
The problem is how do you show that this is a conformal in infrared? So, in four dimensions, you have the exact beta function, you can prove it there. How do you do it for that?
Yeah, so in four dimensions, so in 2+1 dimensions, the you do a similar techniques as you do in 3+1 without the beta function. What you say is you assume the theory flows to conformality theory. Because of non-renormalization theorems, the superpotential stays the same. If it flows to conformality theory, then all terms must have R charge 2. Okay, that gives a condition on the anonymous dimensions that each field can pick. And in addition, if you assume the ABS CFP duality, you could exactly compute the scaling dimensions using geometric techniques, but not field theory techniques.
Unlike for
unlike in 3+1 dimensions. And that is an open problem. So you get a prediction from the geometry on the scaling dimensions, which if we will come up with techniques in solving them for in field theory, then we could check whether this is the case. In 3+1 dimensions, we have the A maximization. In 2+1 dimensions, we don't have such a thing. We're still lacking this thing. But what we gained from this exercise is that we have a prediction. We have a large set of theories for which we predict what are the dimensions. And we have to test whether it's correct or not. Okay? Very rich spectrum of scaling dimensions.
Any questions? What is the supersymmetry in the generic model of this type?
Four supercharges.
So as n equals 2 in 3 dimensions?
N equals 2 in 3 dimensions.
As an instant derivation.
So the way we set up the problem, we are very picky about the choice of Lagrangians, right? We don't allow for terminal phases. We are only setting the coefficients to be plus, minus, right? They only are coming with the, in the form of a tile, right? If we move a little bit away from that, then it stops being.
Well, it's just in four dimensions, having four supersymmetries, four supercharges is not enough to suppress. When there are fractional instanton corrections, they show up on the, on the gravity side.
Not on the superpotential, because it's protected. So superpotential is holomorphic in all of its variables, cannot get quantum corrections. Theory does not develop a scale.
But the moduli space.
So the metric on the moduli space might get many instanton corrections, and we have no control over that.
Okay.
And we are not going to make any cleaning. Mm-hmm. But what we will be able to do is to specify the algebraic description of the moduli space. Namely, give a set of equations in some set of variables that characterize the algebraic, the manifold as an algebraic variety. Any questions?
Is there a way to couple these two plus one dimensional theories to four dimensional n equals for Young-Lin theory on the boundary? So Gaiota and Witten use some 2+1 dimensional theories.
It's not so obvious from the stringy construction, right? Because what we do, we take N2 brains, transverse to a Calabria 4, which is singular, non-compact. To get to 3-brain, you'll have to compactify, you'll have to understand how to go down to type 2B, let's say. It's not so simple. The string theory doesn't give you so much. You see, if you start compactifying, then it's not anymore a Calabria 4 cone. So it's not anymore clear that you have a conformative field. You introduce some scales of compactification. You move away from the conformative field. So all of those tools over here will have to be revisited. So I don't see, I mean, maybe we should think of an idea, but it's not immediate for sure. Any questions?
It seems that you have one too many map between any 3 plus 1 dimensional timing and 2 plus 1 dimensional.
That's very good. So, given a single piling, I have infinitely many conformal figures. Okay?
Suppose that you start in 3 plus 1 conformal figures, one is entirely. Is there a way to flow the corresponding 2 plus 1, which has the same tiling but a specific level?
To flow, no. Because you see, the choice of chance-size levels will tell you which Calabria 4 you get. A different choice gives a different Calabria 4.
I can imagine a different choice would correspond to turning on a different operator, which will generate a flow.
I don't see that. Perhaps it is. I'm not saying it's not. I don't see it from the formulation. What you do is to turn on couplings, right? It's not something that you can do by dimensional reduction. And you just take the same action that you have in 3 plus 1 dimensions, you throw away the kinetic terms for the gauge field, but you add instead chance-Simons interactions with specified levels. It's not something you get by dimensional reduction. It's not something that you get by any obvious stringy mechanism. Perhaps, well, the only thing I can offer is if you look at the time, I don't know if you want to get into this point, but try to think about that. If you think of each edge here, of the network of edges here, as forming a network of Nevesh-Schwarz 5 ways. In, let's say, let's start in type 2B. So every edge is some Nevesh-Schwarz 5 brain which tracks a complicated curve which is defined by this network of edges. And every tile is a D5 brain. Okay? Then the effective theory on these brains will be given by what we are saying over here. Okay? Now suppose that instead of type 2B, you put this system into type 2A with Nevesh-Schwarz 5 brains just like before, but now instead of D5 brains, there will be D4 brains, then the effective theory will be the same 2 plus 1 dimensional theory that we talk about over here, except that each tile can have a flux of a scalar. There is in type, the type 2A Nevesh-Schwarz 5 brain has a single compact scalar which can be thought of as a zero-form gauge field. Therefore, you could take an integral over the boundary over here, and that will be a quantized flux of this zero-form gauge field. Because it's a gauge field, this flux will be quantized, will be an integer, and will play the role of the Chern-Simons level. So now every tile will come with a level. So this is one way of thinking in terms of this stringy construction of this theory.
Any questions? Okay, so let's write down the Lagrangian explicitly. Here's the kinetic term. The kinetic term for the chiral multiplets. Those are the bifundamentals. So that's a standard kinetic term. I sum over all bifundamentals. These are the gauge fields. Here's the Chern-Simons terms written in superspace. Ka's are the Chern-Simons levels. Those are the new sets of integers that we have. A runs from 1 up to the number of tiles. And the superpotential is the usual one that we know from 3 plus 1 dimension. And once we see this Lagrangian, right, so given a tiling, we write down this Lagrangian. And the next step is to write down the potential energy and to solve for the vacuum equations. Now, the choice of levels is going to be this one. The first choice, the sum of all levels equals 0, basically means that we decouple the center of mass motion of the M2 grains. We don't want to do much to it, so we set the sum to be 0. The second condition is just for convenience. We could take it to be the greatest common divisor to be not equal to 1, and then the moduli space is going to be an orbifold of the moduli space where the greatest common divisor is equal to 1. So I'm going to just simplify life and just take this to be 1. It is a straightforward generalization to do it for not equal to 1. And I'll skip this part. This has to do with some technical derivation of the moduli space. These are the vacuum equations. And those vacuum equations are quite instructive. It's very good to stare at them for some time and to see what we can get out of them. So these are the F terms, okay? These are the same set of equations that we know and we understand in 3 plus 1 dimensions, okay? So the vacuum equations would not be different in 3 plus 1 and 2 plus 1 dimensions from this perspective. The second line is just a D-term equation, okay? It's the usual D-term that we understand in 3 plus 1 dimensions. So D-term equations, what they tell you is that when I solve for the D-terms, it's as if I divide by the complexified gauge group. So if I just demand that different observables will be gauge invariant with respect to the gauge group, I already solved for the D-terms. Now look at the right-hand side over here. Here in 3 plus 1 dimensions, we would find a Philopoulos term. Instead, what we find are the Chern-Simons levels. So it's a very interesting interpretation. We should think of Chern-Simons levels as Fayet-Iliopoulos terms. Okay? So the same intuition that we apply in 3 plus 1 dimensions to Fayet-Iliopoulos terms should be applied to Chern-Simons levels over here. These are k's multiplied by sigma, where sigma is the real scalar that is a member of the vector multiplet in 2 plus 1 dimensions. Okay? The last equation is a new equation. It does not appear in 3 plus 1. In fact, it comes from dimensional reduction. It basically says that the real scalar field, or maybe the adjoint value scalar field in the vector multiplet commutes with the chiral multiplets in this way. And we should note that this sigma is not this sigma. This sigma belongs to one gauge group, and this sigma belongs to the other gauge group, where A and B are the groups under which the chiral multiplet is charged. Okay? Any questions about this?
In 3 plus 1 dimensions, the phi Lucas term comes from some close production.
In three plus one dimensions, they do. Yeah, they are closed ring moduli.
It's what moduli?
Closed ring moduli.
It's which one? It's a step up here.
I don't understand. What's
the element?
Oh, that's the question. Okay. Yes, they are Kelly moduli. One more comment is that if I would make a distinction whether this right hand side is zero or not. Okay? If I will find this is zero, then I will insist that for the corresponding gauge group, all observables will be gauge invariant. If I will find that this is non-zero, I will not insist that they will be gauge invariant. I will allow for any possible value. And that's a crucial point. So in 2+1 dimensions, I will be selective. I will not demand gauge invariance with respect to all gauge groups. I will demand gauge invariance only with respect to situations where the right-hand side is zero. And that's the point, that's the crucial point, which makes the moduli space not three complex dimensional, but rather four complex dimensional. That's very important.
That you spontaneously break some of
that, you know, in the language, you need to have Wilson loops in order to satisfy the non-gauge invariance. But in terms of these equations, I will, for example, have X's. X's do carry charges, but I will still consider that to be observable in the field. Okay? Now, the final comment is that if we look at the case of one B brain, sorry, one M2 brain, then X is a 1-by-1 matrix, sigma is a 1-by-1 matrix, those matrices commute, and since this is the same X over here, this implies that all sigmas are equal. All sigmas are equal, and therefore all phi Angelopoulos terms are parameterized by the same sigma, and they are all aligned along a very specific direction in the space of all phi Angelopoulos terms. So in 3+1 dimensions, I can have a very large a space of phi Angelopoulos term. The number of gauge groups will tell me the dimension of possible phi Angelopoulos terms that I can choose, and I can choose any value, any point on this space. Over here, because of the third condition, all phi Angelopoulos terms are aligned on a single line, a one-dimensional subspace out of all possible phi Angelopoulos terms. So if I take this line and I choose the space which is orthogonal to that space, all directions orthogonal there, I can set them in such a way that the right-hand side will be zero. Okay? So now I divide by one less gauge group. That gives me the four-dimensional Calabi-Yau moduli space. Is this point clear? Okay, that's what I said in words, but if you do it, if you translate into some equations, then there is some algorithm. Here's the flow chart of the algorithm. On the left over here, you put the data that you take from the tiling, you take the quiver, you take the superpotential, you take the chance times levels, those are the three levels of data. You put them into some black box over here. This is a black box using some methods in total geometry, but I mean, we can go over them, but it's just technical. The important output is that you get a matrix which is which has 4 times C. C is some number which is quite important, but let's not go over this now. But this 4 basically says that we are getting a Calabi-Yau manifold, which is
four complex dimensional, non-compact, cone, toric. And it's a cone over a Sasaki-Einstein 7 manifold. Yes?
Can you explain why in the two dimensions, all the case have to be lie along a single line? And you have to follow that.
So suppose that I have five gauge groups, right? For each gauge group, I can choose any failure constant that I like. So I have a five-dimensional choice of five-dimensional space corresponding to a choice of failure constants. Okay? There's one condition that since the center of mass is decoupled, I would ask that the sum of all failure constants will be zero. Okay? So by this, I reduce the subspace to four-dimensional. Now, I can choose, if I choose anything over there, then that will force the fields over here to admit solutions, and it will increase the dimension of the moduli space. Just because I choose here to be non-zero, some of the fields here will have to be non-zero, and I will turn on so-called baryonic directions on the moduli space, okay? Now, because of this third equation, all sigmas are the same.
It's special two
plus one, yes.
But it's not there in 3 plus 1.
That's right. So there's the third equation implies that all of them are aligned, and this restricts me to a one-dimensional subspace along failure plus terms. So now starting with five gauge groups, there's one condition that the sum is zero, reducing to four parameter space. This further reduces to one. So I have three independent for which I can pick linear combinations of these equations such that the right hand side will be zero. This one, take the covariant derivative. It's the kinetic term for the scalar field.
Okay, thanks.
Let me write this down to V X for V. And then we'll have a term in 3 plus 1 dimensions, you'll have a term which looks like this. Like this. So you'll have two terms of this type. So it's a fundamental, so it will be AX minus XA. And if you take the third component in 2 plus 1 dimensions, it becomes a real adjoint, the scalar field, which we call sigma. So that's the sigma. Then you get sigma X minus X sigma. Yeah.
K is not zero, so the center of mass not free. Isn't that you get the caviar field?
Yes, that's right.
What do you mean?
Somehow what you do is to force the background. It's not anymore the usual M-theory background. It's something slightly more. And perhaps, so for example, there were some papers about that the way you realize it in M-theory. Or it's not really empty. If it's that way, it's realized as a cosmological term, massive type 2A. Since you are in type 2A, there's no guarantee anymore that it is Pelabian 4. So it doesn't work. Now, there is also another problem. Every field here appears once with a plus sign and once with a minus sign. Okay? And there are G equations here parameterized by A. A goes from 1 to G. Okay? If you sum all of these equations from 1 to G, then the left hand side will be identically 0 because everything appears once with a plus sign
ones with minus alpha. All of these fields are fields. Okay, so they appear precisely once with a plus, precisely once with a minus, and therefore this will be identically zero, and that will force some ka sigma a to be zero. And since all sigmas are equal, then that's the condition that you get. So you really have to modify the gauge here in order to allow for this. Okay. So now, here's a summary of what I said in words before. The second set of equations are D-term, but I pay a very special attention to situations where the right-hand side vanishes and where the right-hand side does not vanish, okay? And the simple rule which I will use is that if it vanishes, I'm going to consider only gauge invariance with respect to that relevant gauge group. If it does not vanish, I will allow for gauge on non-invariant terms. Okay? The next thing to introduce is something which is called the master space, and that's some work that I've done while being in PI back in 2007. The master space, by definition, is the set of solutions to the F terms, but not to the D terms. Okay? As such, it is a space which in 3+1 dimensions gets the interpretation as the baryonic and mesonic moduli space, both baryonic and mesonic. Okay, so it allows both for three complex dimensional mesonic moduli space and G minus one dimensional baryonic moduli space, giving rise to a G plus two moduli space, which is Calabi-R. Okay, it has the following properties. It is toric, it is singular, it's non-compact, it's Calabi-R, and it's a cone, and has complex dimension G plus two. Okay, so every tiling has a corresponding master space. And if the number of tiles is equal to G, then the master space has dimension G plus two. Okay, and this master space is very special, very important for constructing the Calabi-R four moduli space, the mesonic moduli space. What I will do is that if I was in 3+1 dimensions, then in order to start with the master space, I will need to divide by all D terms. If I divide by all D terms, then I'll get, there are G minus one D terms, starting from G plus two, I'll get a three-dimensional Calabi-R. Okay? If I'm in 2+1 dimensions, one direction is special. That's the direction of Chern-Simons levels. I will not divide by it. I will divide by G minus two. Okay? I'll divide by G minus two directions, I'll get the four-dimensional Calabi-R. Okay? So the master space is a special notion. It's a property of the tiling, and it's a very interesting object. Okay, so let's do one example like this. This is the chessboard array. Pick the Chern-Simons levels to be 1 minus 1. And here's the superpotential. The moduli space is C4. How do we do that? If we choose the number of brains to be 1, then the superpotential identically vanishes because the fields commute. And therefore, we don't have any F terms. There are four fields, and the four fields are just not restricted. They are the second equation, the D-term equation. At best, what it can do is to specify what is the value of sigma, and that's it, right? So the X fields can admit any value, and therefore the moduli space is C4. Third set of equations set to sigma to be equal, and second set the value of sigma, okay? So that's the simplest example if you want. And here there are other examples.
Here's another model. Two adjoints, two bifundamentals. Here's the superpotential. And if you compute the moduli space, it becomes again C4, because here there is a commutator for one brain. This superpotential identically vanishes, and the there are no restrictions on those fields. So this is the first instance of the notion of toric duality, where you have two different gauge theories in the UV that have the same moduli space in the infrared. Okay, take those two theories, and they are toric dual to each other. Okay, so now one can study the properties of these gauge theories into more detail and figure out what is the correspondence between those two different theories. Here's the tiling for this second theory. It corresponds to a single hexagon, but except that one of the edges is double. So now I have two tiles, in fact, right? This is an order two tile that has two edges. And together, if you write down the, if you follow the rules of the tiling that we wrote down, you'll find precisely this Lagrangian that we wrote before.
This equilibrium also is over volume instead of identical brains.
That's right. In flat space, yeah.
Has that been checked in any?
Passed all the checks which.
Wait, how many supersymmetries does it have?
The infrared, it will have a maximal supersymmetry,
no.
16. The formulation is used always by four supercharges. We always work, and the configuration, the construction is always such that it satisfies four supercharges.
If sure that in the infrared it will have
n equals 8. Yeah. If for some reason there is an accidental supersymmetry, then it won't show, right? It won't show from the tiling. It's accidental, so.
But if it is confirmed, I mean, you don't have to flow. This is exactly confirmed. It's quite good.
Yeah, the scaling dimensions are 1/2 for all fields.
For the classical.
Yes.
You don't have to flow. It's like an equals 4.
That's right. That's right. For this particular case, something can happen to the non-DPS states. This has not been checked. Okay, so all of the checks were made on BPS objects. If you can perform checks on non-BPS objects, that would be nice.
Even for BPS, in the BBM, there was something that I'm clear. You have to construct the disorder local operator. Presumably, you also need something.
You'll have, yeah, you need those things also. Here's another example.
But do you see that do ordinary operators map to disorder operators? So do ordinary operators in one theory, in one description map to disorder operators in another?
This map has not been made. I don't know. I don't know immediately. We can check this. It won't be too hard. But one thing you want to note is that these are joints. Are not charged, so you cannot construct objects out of them. You could construct out of charged objects. But if you take the n equals 1, the number of brains to be 1, then the adjoint fields have no charge, zero charge. Right? So just chiral multiples, complex fields. And so you won't be able to construct charged objects out of them. You'll only be able to construct charged objects of these two.
But then the idea that you can do it for general n.
And for general n, this will be a joint.
Yep.
Right? So this is the un times un, two adjoints, two identical adjoints. So already here you have at least an SU2, or actually even U2, part of the R symmetry. And these two. They have opposite charge, but because of the restriction, so because they have opposite charge, you will have to put some, to dress them with some charge fields in order to compensate. Okay, but for these guys, you don't need. Here's another example with two hexagon. This is the two hexagon tiling. And the interesting point about this is that the interactions are cubic. Here's the interaction term. Because it's hexagon, every node is valence free. There are four different nodes. And there are four cubic interaction terms. In 3+1 dimension, a cubic interaction term will be exactly marginal. In 2+1, it is strongly coupled. Because the natural dimension of a scalar field is 1/2. Each one of them will get 1/2. This is a dimension 3/2 operator in the UV. And therefore, the coefficient here must have a scale. Okay? But as we flow to the infrared, those fields necessarily develop scaling dimensions, which are large. So it's, if you want, Alex, this is the simplest analog of an example which is of a strongly coupled field theory in the infrared. And it's relatively simple, only 2 gauge groups, 6 fields. And our task now will be to compute the scaling dimensions for these guys. And it's not so bad. I mean, the moduli space, you could just compute what it is by looking at the F terms, and you find that the moduli space is the conifold times the complex line, which is Calabi-Yau cone, 4-dimensional, satisfies all the properties that we want to meet. But there is one complex dimension right here. So it's parameterized by phi 1 and phi 2. Because it is like that, and because C is flat, we would expect that their scaling dimension would be the trivial one. So it will be 1/2, okay? 1/2 for this guy, 1/2 for this guy. The remaining X fields are symmetric, as you can see from the quiver, and also from the exchange of charge conjugation. So we would expect that all of them will have the same R charge, or the same scaling dimension. So this gets 1/2. The remaining guys should split 3/2, such that the total charge will be 2. And so this gets 3/4, and this gets 3/4. So we get now a prediction just by symmetry arguments. This is our scaling dimensions. 1/2 for the phis, 3/4 for the x's. And that's a non-trivial superconformal field theory in the infrared. This is something we can, which we can test against the geometric prediction. Now we can look at the dual Sasaki-Einstein manifold, compute volumes of cycles, and compare whether we get those 1/2 and 3/4. And the answer is yes. So if you want, this is a test. It's a kind of a weak test of the ABS-CFT duality because we use symmetry reasonings to compute in the field theory side. It was not a computational tool. We did not use a maximization. We rather used a symmetry argument. But it's still a non-trivial test. OK. Here's the toric diagram for those of you who are versed in toric geometry. I think that we are getting out of time, so let me just summarize what we've done so far. So here's the general principle. To solve the F terms, I always get a master space, and then it's a G+2-dimensional, where G is the number of gauge groups. Third set of equations is going to set the sigmas to be equal. The D terms form linear combinations such that the right-hand side will be 0. I can set it up such that G-2 will have 0 in the right-hand side, and the remaining 2 will have non-zero. And that's why I have
g minus 2 equations starting from g plus 2, I always get four-dimensional complex Calabi-Yau form. Okay? That's the reason all of these tilings with these choices of chance sinus levels give me the Calabi-Yau form moduli space. Moduli space is always toric singular Calabi-Yau form cone. Okay? And now I can start playing with all possible tilings I can think of. Here are quivers where there are five fields and three gauge groups, and these are the precise superpotentials. Each one of them gives rise to an infinite set of conformal field theories, infinitely many Calabi-Yau forms. Okay? In fact, there is a classification. You could start asking, okay, what are all possible quivers I can write down such that I fix the number of fields and I fix the number of terms in the superpotential. And I have an answer for that question, right? So we can start doing some classification problems. Here's the tiling. This is the chessboard array with one double bond. Over here, this is one of the models that we showed before. And, and you see that the superpotential that was written in the previous slide over here for one, this superpotential is just encoded in terms of this tiling over here. Okay? If I count, if I choose the Chern sinus levels for this particular quiver to be 1, minus 1, and 0, and I compute the mesonic moduli space, and then I find again that it is the conifold times C. But the advantage that I have is that there is an additional one-dimensional baryonic branch for this theory. So with this formulation, I have a better view of the baryonic moduli space. Then the combined baryonic and mesonic moduli space turns out to be C5, the space of all possible values for the fields. I compute the scaling dimensions, and then I find 1/2 for one of the fields and 3/8 to the other. So now I can talk again about the notion of toric duality. Both these models, this one, and the two hexagon model, they have the same moduli space in the infrared. So they are dual to each other. One of them had dimensions 1/2 and 3/4. The other one has dimensions 1/2 and 3/8. How do they are related? So it turns out that fields of this guy are bilinears of fields of the other. And I can have the precise mapping between them. What I gain is that I gain enough additional information about the baryonic moduli space for these theories. Two phases, one with two tiles, one with three tiles. The master space of the other is the mesonic moduli space, master space of the one with three tiles is the both mesonic and baryonic. The mesonic generators are linear in the first formulation and bilinear in the second, and so on. We can go over those things one by one. Okay, let's finish now and let me go to the summary. Hilbert series classification, six fields. So let's just flash those things. Summary. So using those brain tilings, we found that there are infinitely many quivers that we can construct. And we can pick the periodic tiling of the two-dimensional plane. And by the rules that we provided, can construct a Lagrangian in 2 plus 1 dimensions. which is parametrized by the Chern-Simons levels. Okay? So a given tiling gives rise to infinitely many conformal field theories by allowing the choice of Chern-Simons levels. So each, so in other words, what we can say is that each tiling represents a lattice of superconformal field theories in 2+1 dimensions. We get a variety of scaling dimensions. In fact, if you go into the details, you find very interesting numbers, solutions of algebraic equations, quite intricate matter. We found toric duality. I gave several examples about that. And perhaps we can do some more things. There's plenty of things to do. In fact, it opens a new project of trying to understand Calabi-Yau's on the one hand, Calabi-Yau falls on the one hand, and quiver Chern-Simons theories on the other hand, and really opens up a whole set of projects for PhD students, and it's quite exciting. Okay, thank you very much. You could think of them in terms of fibrils that wrap free cycles in the in the dual Sasaki-Einstein. So I don't know if you're, are you asking in the Sasaki-Einstein background or the M2?
Well,
For the M2 background, it's hard. You could think of them as, right. So the Calabi-Yau 4 has a collection of vanishing cycles, okay? And you could take, let's say, fibrils wrapping three cycles, fractional fibrils wrapping three cycles, and the wrapping number would correspond to a Chern-Simons level. Has not been clarified into detail, so there is some work to do there, I think, to clean this this thing and to explain precisely how the counting works and how you match the number of gauge groups with the given choice of Chern-Simons levels. This is yet to be done.
And in the case of the Sasaki-Einstein variable, that is the last rule.
So for the case of Sasaki-Einstein manifold, the homologically non-trivial cycles of the Sasaki-Einstein are different than the vanishing cycles of the Calabi-Yau 4. There is some mapping, but it's not a, you have to be careful. Some of them do go, do become homological in non-trivial cycles, and some don't. There, you could, so there, it's more natural to talk about two cycles and five cycles for Sasaki-Einstein 7. Which give rise to bions for the case of five cycles, and perhaps some kind of vortex-like objects in the case of two cycles. But it's a very unclear point. I mean, that's one of the biggest puzzles. And what happens when you take a two-brain that wraps two cycles on Sasaki-Einstein 7? It's not clear what is the dual object to that. The Chern-Simons levels are really not so much there because, I mean, it's just a Sasaki-Einstein geometry. It's more like it's part of the properties of the Sasaki-Einstein.
I thought that's a baryonic operator.
The five brains are baryonic operators. They have a scaling that goes like n to the 1/2. So those are not the usual bions that.
No, you need to add the toothed flux.
Toothed flux?
Yeah, so to make it get invariant, you need to have a certain number of matter fields.
Yeah.
To make it get invariant, you need this magnetic flux. the reserved operator.
And it becomes a scale of order n?
Because it has n fields.
Okay. This is something I don't know. So maybe John can say more about that. Yeah, so I'd like to understand that better.
More questions? Well, let's thank Anne Hagen.